Okay, so this morning we're reading from the third volume of the Adi Lila, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. It goes something like this. Translation. At that time, Advaita Acharya was greatly pleased. The Lord understood this, and he was somewhat ashamed, but he offered Advaita Acharya his benediction. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Advaita Acharya was a disciple of Madhavendra Puri, Ishvara Puri's spiritual master. Therefore, Ishvara Puri, the spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was Advaita Acharya's godbrother. As such, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu treated Advaita Acharya as his spiritual master. But Srila Advaita Acharya did not like this behavior of Lord Chaitanya, for he wanted to be treated as his eternal servant. Advaita Prabhu's aspiration was to be the servant of the Lord, not his spiritual master, and therefore devised a plan to antagonize the Lord. He began to explain the path of philosophical speculation in the midst of some unfortunate Mayavadis. And when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu heard about this, he immediately went there, in a very angry mood, began to beat Advaita Acharya. At that time, Advaita Acharya, greatly pleased, began to dance, saying, "Just see how my desire has now been fulfilled. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to treat me honorably for so long, but now he is treating me neglectfully. This is my reward. His affection for me is so great that he wanted to save me from the hands of the Mayavadis." Hearing this statement, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was somewhat ashamed, but he was very much pleased with Advaita Acharya. Tabe Acharya Gosaniya Ananda Haila Lajate Haila Prabhu Prasada Karila. At that time, Advaita Acharya was greatly pleased. The Lord understood this, and he was somewhat ashamed, but he offered Advaita Acharya his benediction. So this is what I like to refer to as I think some people use this term, a teaching moment, a moment to actually consider what's actually going on here. Besides the obvious references here to how Lord Chaitanya was disturbed that he was preaching Mayavadi philosophy, was actually Advaita Acharya's trick. So there's some, we could speak all morning on that topic, but we're going to change the subject a little bit here to something that's even more interesting, is this concept of why Lord Chaitanya wanted to worship Advaita Acharya and Advaita Acharya wanted to worship Lord Chaitanya. You have this kind of like this strange standoff. Advaita Acharya was at least 50 years Lord Chaitanya's senior. And I know when I was being raised as a young boy, I was always taught, respect your elders. I think that's still somewhat, maybe not so much, but hopefully people are still teaching their children to respect your elders. So even on a mundane plane, Lord Chaitanya is wanting to actually engage that concept. But to speak of the fact that Advaita Acharya was praying dearly to have Lord Chaitanya descend, and he wanted to, as all of our great acharyas, set the ideal example, which was to worship Advaita Acharya. But Advaita Acharya, knowing the heart of Lord Chaitanya, knowing who exactly he was also feeling very perplexed because he was thinking, this is backwards. I should be worshiping Lord Chaitanya. So he came up with this device of method and he seemed to pick the right, what do they say? He picked the nerve of Lord Chaitanya by doing the very thing that he knew would just, you know, break him out of this dilemma. And he started preaching Mayavadi philosophy. And of course, Lord Chaitanya has come, along with Srila Prabhupada and our entire lineage, is to try to help people understand that that's not very helpful. And so Lord Chaitanya was almost forced to have to say something. And it says here that he actually went and beat him. I don't want to speculate on just how badly he beat him, but he could have just verbally beaten him. But at least the dilemma, the problem was broken. So what was this problem? This problem is actually the reason why there was a problem is because there's something going on here called Vaishnav etiquette. So that's what I want to talk about this morning, and I want to get a sense of what is our understanding of etiquette. before anybody looks it up on their phones. And some people tell me, what do you think the word etiquette means? How does it apply? When you hear the word etiquette, what does that mean to you? Does somebody want to answer? Moral rules? What else? Accept protocols in relation to another entity. Anybody else want to say what etiquette means to them? Keisha? To show respect. That's a big part of it, yeah. You're pointing to each other. Oh, respect. Okay, good. Yeah, so this is what etiquette means. And so I have a question now, because we know Prabhupada teaches us that he refers to the yatato brahma jigyasya. We all know that it means now in the human form of life is the time to inquire. And he makes the distinction that the animals don't have the intelligence to inquire, which is why our opportunity here in the human form of life is so rare, and we should not waste it. We should be careful to do as much as we can to take advantage of our human intelligence. So part of that human intelligence, is to understand some of these subtleties called etiquette. So the question that I have is, does that mean animals have no etiquette? How would you answer that? Do animals have any form of etiquette? Does anybody observe any form of etiquette in the animal species? Exactly. So there is some sort of, I don't know, maybe it's stretching the word a little bit too much to say etiquette. Some people would say it's instinct. But not only the male lion, but where I live in California, they have what's referred to as the Channel Islands. And if you take one of these tour boats out behind the Channel Islands, they'll show you on the beaches, there's a whole bunch of these sea lions, seals, they're called seals. And they point out that you'll notice there's a bunch of seals here, and then maybe 200 yards down the beach, there's a bunch of seals here, and a bunch of seals here. And they explain exactly what you're saying. It's also true in the seal species. There's only one male species, one male seal, and all the 50-some other ones that are there, that's his tribe. And if any other male comes on that beach, they're going to be in for a fight. So I think this is something we see in several different species. There's all sorts of different little rules of behavior in the different animal species. I think maybe you've seen, like, you have geese and duck here. Sometimes they migrate. And when they fly in the sky, on that wedge formation, the ones in the front are breaking the wind so that the other ones behind it don't have to work so hard. So they're working the hardest. There's actually a whole thermodynamics thing that's going on when these birds, it's not just some magical reason why they do this, it's a very scientific reason. It makes it easier for the birds. They get just in the right place where they don't have to work so hard. So after a couple of minutes, the one in the front goes to the back, and then the new one comes to the front. And they rotate around like this. And it actually is pretty miraculous the way Krishna's given all these different animals different forms of intelligence to survive. Same thing with the penguins down in the Antarctic. How can they survive at 20 below zero or 50 below zero, whatever is ridiculously cold? And when they get together, they form a bond. And what happens is they take turns. The ones on the outside are obviously getting the worst of the cold, and they'll rotate around, and they'll go to the middle, and they'll all take their 10 or 15 minutes around the outside in this sub-zero weather. So there's some form of actual, again, etiquette may be too strong of a word, but at least some sort of instinctual knowledge that's being shared amongst these different animals. There's so many examples I think I came up with. I don't know how many people know what meerkats are, but they're kind of a cross between a gopher and a squirrel. And they go out in the desert, and they have a very interesting tradition where they're able to, especially when there's some young meerkats being born, they take turns standing up on the back of their feet and stretching their necks up very high and looking, if there's any danger, while the other ones are tending to the young babies and so forth. So they know they're safe. They're kind of like a lookout at night, a security guard. And they take turns doing that. So there's actually all sorts of things we can find. I think people who study the mammals, what do you call it, the porpoises and the whales, I don't know particularly, but if we act, the people that study all these different animals, what I think intrigues them so much is that they have all their own little rules of the tribe. So we are the human species. What are the rules that we have? Etiquette is actually a form of rules and laws. Now, obviously, in America, we drive on the other side of the road, as I think most of you understand. So I have to be very thoughtful when I'm driving here because my tendency is to go to the wrong side. And that's a law that if I break it, not only could I get myself in a lot of trouble crashing into another car, but if an officer were to see me in the wrong time in the wrong place, I could probably be ticketed for it. So those are hard laws. But in this case, etiquette are maybe more subtle laws. So the question is, you know, where does etiquette play in terms of our human species of life? How does it intervene with what we're doing? And we find that there's different degrees of etiquette. For example, I like to think sometimes of what Americans, they made these, what they referred to as old spaghetti westerns. And the two, you know, these two bandits meet out in some dark, dingy place, and they're going to share a whiskey. And the guy says to the other guy, he says, come up here and have a whiskey with me. And the other guy says, I ain't going to drink no whiskey with you. So at that point, he's breaking some etiquette. He's saying, nope, I don't consider you good enough to share a whiskey with. I mean, it's there's some etiquette there, but it's on a very, very low level. Or they sometimes it's referred to as, there's another example of that called honor amongst thieves. I mean, they're all a bunch of thieves. They go around and steal, and then they run out to the caves. In California, we have all these sort of strange things. This is the history of California. Jai, Jai, Radhika Kulananda, Lakshman Hanuman Sitaram. So we have all these different kinds of what you would refer to as kind of low-class forms of etiquette. So let me just read something here, if I can find it in my notes quickly. Okay. So this is actually from the Antya Lila. It says, my dear Sanatana, although you're delivered of the entire universe, and although even the demigods and great saints are purified by touching you, it is the characteristics of a devotee to observe and protect the Vaishnav etiquette. Maintenance of the Vaishnav etiquette is the ornament of a devotee. If one transgresses the laws of etiquette, people make fun of him, and thus he is vanquished in both this world and the next. So that's from the Antya Lila. This was spoken by Lord Chaitanya when he discovered that Sanatana Goswami was actually taking the long way around. I believe he was trying to get around the Jagannath temple. And he noticed that, you know, that apparently it was during the hot season and his feet were swelling because he was walking in the hot sand and his feet were burning up. And Lord Chaitanya, of course, was very compassionate. Why are you doing this? Your feet are swelling up. And of course, Sanatana Goswami, because he had some Islamic background, he was saying, oh my Lord, he says, I am fallen soul. I don't even want to be near the Jagannath temple because I'm not qualified. I don't feel qualified to be close. So one of the things we find with Vaishnav etiquette is really kind of a complete flip-flop of what we see in the world today. And for the most part, there are exceptions. But for the most part, in the world today, everybody is thinking about what? Me, 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 me. I want, I want, I want. And when you really start seeing, there's so many examples in our books, Prabhupada illustrates so many examples, where the Vaishnav is actually thinking, no, 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 not me, you. When we say namaste to each other, it's a very traditional Indian greeting. We're saying, I am respecting Lord Krishna within the heart of, within your heart as Paramatma. It's not about me, it's about Lord Krishna in your heart as well. So the question is, why is it so important? Why is it so important? I know when I was a little kid, I was very rebellious. I didn't like really pretty much doing anything society asked me to do. I think some of us maybe went through those rebellious years. And I'd say, who cares? Who cares? Of course, I didn't know about what Krishna consciousness was. And you could make the argument that if you don't have a purpose in life, and in fact, actually, this is what many of the impersonalists love about being impersonalists, is they're kind of like total anarchists. They don't follow any rules of anybody. They don't care about any etiquette. Except for etiquette, which means makes them feel better or bigger or more powerful or more worshipped. They seem to like that etiquette. But the point is that in those traditions, but the question is why do we appreciate Vaishnava etiquette so much? And why is it so important? The reason is because without Vaishnava etiquette, etiquette is like a form of language. It's not necessarily a spoken language. It's a language of behavior. The people who teach communications will tell you that only a small percentage, or at least a portion of what's being communicated, is the words. In fact, this is one of the problems we have with the internet nowadays, where people are typing, and they came up with these things called emojis, right? To try to, somebody types something, and they might be being a little sarcastic. And if they're speaking it, usually you can tell by their body language and the intonations of their voice that they're being sarcastic. But if you just type it, they could be completely flipped over. So they have to put this little emoji there with a smile. I'm just making a joke, right? Because there's not everything's being transmitted strictly by the words we use. So this is what etiquette is all about. How are we behaving? And it's important. When Pythagoras, who some people would say was one of the leading teachers of, I think, the Greek tradition, and he was teaching mathematics. Back then, they didn't have microphones. And so they couldn't have, now we have these, those of you who have been to university, they have these huge state, theaters, almost auditoriums, and they have a microphone, and they could put 200 or 300 students in there, and you can all hear the teacher. But back in the days of Greece, ancient Greece, they didn't have microphones, and so the class limits had to be within maybe 30 or 40 people. Otherwise, they wouldn't be able to hear the teacher speak. So if you were a student who wanted to go to the greatest mathematician or philosopher, whatever Pythagoras's contribution was, he was obviously a teacher of high demand. He had a whole large audience to pick from for to be his student. And so he had a very difficult problem. How do I select those, maybe, 200, 500, 1,000 people want to be in my classroom, and yet I can only accept 30. How shall I pick them? And so one of the things he did was he said, okay, you have to fast for 30 days. If you can't do that, you're off the list. And so he created some tangible things in order to separate the wheat from the chaff, as they say. If you're not able to fast for 30 days, I don't even want to try to teach you. I want people who are real serious in my classroom. And in fact, we know in the ancient tradition, I don't know how many people are aware of this, but there's actually a very well-produced video. Somebody in India produced it, called The Teachings of Chanaka Pundit. And one of the things, and there, I think most everybody's here aware of the Mahabharata video and the Ramayana video. I don't know how many people are aware of the fact there's also a video out there called The Teachings of Chanaka Pundit. And it's done a little differently than the Mahabharata and the Ramayana. It's really filmed like in a real traditional ancient Indian village. And it's very, very interesting. You pick up so much of this thing we are talking about today called Vaishnava etiquette, and how they greeted each other, and how they were respectful of each other. And you find many, many clips in this video. You see Chanaka Pandit teaching. And of course, he was one of the Brahmins, and the Brahmins were still very much a very powerful part of society back then. And when his students are sitting there, sitting like perfectly straight, very quiet, repeating exactly what the teacher says, it's almost to the degree of what you see in the military. The military has an etiquette too, right? When you walk into I wasn't in the military, but I have some familiarity with it. When you walk into the office, when you're asked to go into the captain's office or report to your commanding officer, you walk in, you salute, and you keep your mouth shut, and you wait and see what it is that they want to say. Your position is to be quiet. Their position is to speak. And in fact, actually, I remember another cliche when I was a child, which was children should be heard and not seen. I don't know how many people have heard this around here. I don't think... What's that? Excuse me, I say it backwards. Yeah, you're right. Thank you. I said it back. Children should be seen and not heard. And actually, what I wanted to say is they should only speak when spoken to. That's sort of a tag on to the end of that. Now kids run in the room, screaming, yelling, I want attention, and it's sometimes astonishing. In fact, in Mayapur just recently, we were sitting and trying to eat someplace in one of the eating establishments. And there was a kid over there, and he was taking one of these stainless steel cups. He was banging it on the table, just making a racket. And I was going, I was telling Brajani, I was saying, what are the parents doing? I mean, this kid was just bang, 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 bang. He was just making this terrible noise. And then the thing that was astonishing was that the parents, when the kid put the cup down, I was thinking, oh, good, finally. the parents picked the cup and started banging it on the table so the kid would do it some more. And I'm going, ay, 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 what is going on here? Okay? So it seems as if some of these basic, simple concepts of human dignity are just getting thrown out all over the window. You know, so the question is, so anyhow, Chanaka Pandit, when he taught his young brahmacharis, they're very formal. And in fact, actually, I think in the military, they have a thing that says, you know, if you're a junior officer, they say, permission to speak. And then the senior officer, yes, what do you have to say? You know, especially after the senior officer chews them out, you fool, you did this, you did that. You know, keep your mouth shut, listen. And you don't just say, no, but they did, blah, 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 and you start making all these excuses and everything. You don't do that in the military. And then if you have something to say, and usually the senior officer will say, okay, what do you have to say? And then he's asked you to speak. So, you know, I know when I joined the Hare Krishna movement many, many years ago, there was some of that was there. And I don't want to say it's not there at all today either. I'm sure some people are still following these principles. But the point is that when you're in the presence of a senior devotee, you want to show some respect. And many ways that this comes out is when we're preaching, obviously, if there's a person, especially if it's in a particular field, some devotees are expert in different fields, let this person who's the most expert in that field, you know, lead the response or lead the conversation, because they will do the best at actually helping, you know, answer the question or convince the person or assuage whatever doubts they have about what Krishna consciousness is. So these are all different forms and aspects of Vaishnava etiquette that are there that we want to remember. Now, there is an example, and there's also, now, where it gets real interesting is, as we're seeing in today's class, an example where somehow the Vaishnava etiquette was becoming an impediment between Advaita Acharya and Lord Chaitanya. They both had very legitimate reasons to feel that their understanding was the correct one. Advaita Acharya felt very powerfully strong that he needs to be worshiping Lord Chaitanya, and Lord Chaitanya had strong reasons for feeling that, no, you're my senior, you must be respected more. And this is not uncommon that these kind of like etiquette dilemmas come up. There's several examples. If we think of the days when Madri and Kunti, when Prithu died, Pandu died. When Pandu died, the tradition was one of them would go to the funeral pyre. And there's a whole section in the Mahabharata where they have this big, long debate is who's going to... And keep in mind now, they're fighting for their honor. They're debating an etiquette of honor. And Kunti is saying, no, no, I should go. And Madri is saying, no, no, I should go. And they have this whole debate as to why, you know, this is where the whole Vaishnava etiquette gets flipped up on its head. Nowadays, everybody would say, no, you should go, right? Say, you go. I don't want to go. You go. But in this case, they're saying, no, I should go. And I believe the way that was finally resolved was because Madri said, look, you have 4 sons. I have 2. You have a responsibility to train all 4 sons, and my children can be trained nicely by you. It would be disturbing to all 4 of your sons. And there may have been some other reasons in there also, but I think that was one of the most prominent reasons. So there are examples of how this etiquette can sometimes become a little bit of a problem, a little bit of a dilemma. Let me just see here if I can get my computer to cooperate. There is another example of how... Oh, here's an interesting thing that I found. We all know that we're supposed to be dasa anu dasa anu dasa. We're supposed to be the servant of the servant of the servant. And that's, again, part of our Vaishnava etiquette. So... to give you an example of how that particular tradition got abused, particularly in the early days, was apparently some devotees who were still immature in their realizations used this to instruct some other devotee to say, you should be my servant. And they became their full-time servant. And when Prabhupada found out about this, he wasn't happy about it at all. He said, you know, being the servant of the servant isn't mean, you know, you get somebody to serve you all the time because they're your servant. No, that's, see, this is our Western kind of hodgepodge way we twist everything up and bring all of our bad condition into the formula and somehow come out, you know, thinking that we're right. But that's an example of the etiquette kind of getting twisted around on its head. And then there's other examples. Let me just give you a sec here. There's a example of when Lord Chaitanya wanted to go to South India, Damodar Pandit was his junior, and he was technically inappropriate for him to give instructions to Lord Chaitanya. He was his junior. It was technically inappropriate for him to give him instructions. And yet, Lord Chaitanya accepted that as a means of, out of his affection, that he was wanting to do something, and he was accepting Damodar Pandit's interjection there. So sometimes the interpersonal relationships will overstep the formal etiquette. There's an example of one of Lord Chaitanya's associates, Govinda, who was Lord Chaitanya was resting apparently in a door jam, and Govinda stepped over Lord Chaitanya to be able to massage his feet, which of course that's a form of inappropriate behavior. You don't step over a Vaishnava's body like that. But then Lord Chaitanya finally woke up, and it was a significant time later, and he asked Govinda, he said, "Why didn't you go take prasadam?" And he said, "Oh, I can't step over your body, my lord." And he's kind of going, like, "Wait a minute. How did you get in here?" And he said, "Oh, I stepped over your body." And he said, "Well, yeah, but wait a minute. You stepped over my body to get in here to massage my feet, and yet you're telling me you won't step over my body to go take prasadam." And his answer was very insightful. He said, "No, because that's for my own sense gratification. But my see the service attitude. He was willing to violate the etiquette in order to engage in the service of massaging Lord Chaitanya's feet. When it came around for his own personal needs or wants or desires, he said, no, that's now I am not going to do it." Etiquette's also, like I gave the kind of crude example of the spaghetti Westerners, a way of showing, if you know, you can use etiquette in different ways. And you can use it in order to be able to express some disapproval. Probably one of the most dramatic examples of that is when Srila Prabhupada was asked to meet, and forgive me, I don't know who this person was, but he was a very high government personality, like the Prime Minister of France. Somebody might remember who this person was. And he was escorted to, you know, the palace in France. And Yogeshwar was there, and about three or four devotees went with him. And he was escorted into a sitting room, and Prabhupada sat there with his little walking stick. And the etiquette was that when the Prime Minister of France walks in, you stand up to greet him. And the Prime Minister walked in, and Prabhupada sat in that chair. And Yogeshwar, there's actually a video of this. Yogeshwar leans over and he goes, "Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada." Wouldn't move. And Yogeshwar, "What are we going to do? What are we going to do?" You know? And if you actually watch the video, there's a few minutes. You know, it's one of those, it's probably only a few seconds, but it's like everybody's like, eyes are shooting around like, what are we going to do here? He's not following the etiquette. And if you talk to the devotees who were there at that time, they'll tell you that that was Prabhupada's little way of protesting. Your French government is just the whole mishmash of Kali Yuga. We do not accept your government. We have a higher government. We have a higher principle. We are teaching Krishna consciousness. And of course, you know, I guess eventually what happened was the head of state kind of like finally realized that, okay, we're dealing with something a little unusual here. And he proceeded to just get on with the ceremonies. And then, of course, Prabhupada got up and on his terms, not their terms. Then he got up and he went, "Oh, very nice." And then he greeted him and was very diplomatic. Prabhupada was also extremely diplomatic. But this is an example where etiquette was sort of, again, flipped upside down on its head and used to express in a very subtle way something, you know, and who knows, maybe that prime minister went back later after the whole thing was over and said, "What was that all about?" And maybe he had a realization. You know, there's a saying, Janaka Pandit says, "Who can instruct a king?" Right? Because a king is a king. You say something he doesn't like, you're in the dungeon or your head's on the ground, one of the two. Right? Who can instruct a king? This is a problem with people who are very, very powerful. How do you communicate to them when you have some real serious message that you want to share? And there's histories filled with so many examples of these despot-type kings and rulers, and the world's filled with people like this. So that's a whole lecture on the concept of power and how not to misuse power and how to try to keep doors open for communication and so forth. Okay, let's see what else we got here. So there's another example of, I think most people know this story about Ramanujacharya was given this mantra. And his spiritual master said, a very important mantra. Don't just give it away. I mean, you know, keep it secret to yourself. And it's a very important mantra. It'll help liberate all the living entities. So Ramanujacharya immediately turned and went out and started telling everybody. So again, there's some etiquette there. He's being instructed by his spiritual master not to do something, and he turned around and completely violated it and went out and gave it to everybody. So what you find in these examples is there's a repeating theme, which is, and this is what makes this whole discussion today very, very tricky, because yesterday we were talking about the trouble you get into when you start self-interpreting. Remember, we have those four flaws. And it's very difficult when there's principles of etiquette. But we're seeing, and I could give so many more examples, of where etiquette has been violated. But if you see the reason why it's been violated is because there's a higher principle. So in the case of Ramanujacharya telling his spiritual master telling Ramanujacharya, "Don't do this," he immediately was thinking like a Vaishnava. He's saying, "Well, if this is going to help everybody, I'm going to do it. You're the one who's out of line here." And we'll see in all these examples when the etiquette is being broken, it is because of there is some higher overriding principle. I know in Krishna Dharma's translation of the Mahabharata, there's all sorts of little examples in there of where etiquette it has to be over. You know, there's these dilemmas that come up, and they have to be resolved. But they always get resolved based on what's the highest principle, what's going to be the highest good for the people, how the people are going to best be learning, how are they going to understand. let's see what else I got here. This is sort of another interesting little thing to take note of, is that when Krishna played his flute, right, it was so enchanting to the gopis that all the etiquette went right out the window. You know, they were supposed to be nice, chaste village people, and in Vedic culture, the ladies don't go out at night, what to speak of chasing young some boy off in the woods someplace. And here's Krishna playing his flute, and all that etiquette, boom, went right out the window. Because it was so enchanting. So, of course, that's an extraordinary situation because it involves Krishna himself, and it gives us some idea and some understanding of how attractive Lord Krishna was, that even the most, I can't think of hardly any forms of etiquette that could be more severe than in the Vedic culture, young women just literally running out in the middle of the night and doing the kind of things that they did. But the lesson for us to be learned there is just see how completely captivating and enchanting and extraordinary. Krishna was unresistible. I mean, that's really what the message was. Forget it. They didn't even think about etiquette. It was just boom, like a magnet. We were just out there. So this form of etiquette, this type of etiquette is or understanding etiquette is a very important part of what we are trying to teach in Krishna consciousness. Unfortunately, the majority of the world doesn't even understand some of the most basic forms of etiquette. And it's to our benefit. So just like when Pythagoras had these rules, you want to be in my class? Okay, first you have to prove how much of a student, the qualities you have as a student to be in my class. Go fast for 30 days. You know. So similarly, in Krishna consciousness, when Prabhupada was here, he dealt with everybody at whatever level they were at. And everybody's at different levels of understanding. And so for some of his disciples, he knew that they would do extraordinary things. And he'd put heavy burdens on their head. And they would go out and do it. And other people, I mean, you know, I've actually met people. It's sometimes astonishing to know that there were people, I actually thinking of a few people right now in my head, that had actually had a lot of association with Srila Prabhupada. And they were just like the rest of us. They were doing their thing, maybe 18, 20, 25 years old, maybe going to school, maybe out of business, whatever it was. And they were swept up and had an opportunity to be in Prabhupada's presence and talk to Prabhupada and engage with Prabhupada. And yet somehow or another, they didn't choose to become a disciple. And you got to wonder, you know, it's like, what were they thinking? Or were they thinking, maybe is the question. So some people immediately, I mean, then you hear the other extreme. Somebody gets a little tiny book in the middle of the Midwest or some distant place, Alaska, and they read some little tiny, you know, Krishna conscious pamphlet that somehow found its way up there in somebody's suitcase. And they go, okay, I'm going. And they go, they drop everything. They fly to Los Angeles. They walk into the temple and say, I'm here. I'm ready to serve. And they haven't even met Prabhupada yet. So we're all at different levels of awareness, of consciousness. And Prabhupada would teach everybody based on the level of their consciousness. And I know when I was on Radha Dhamadhar, I don't know if this term is still around, but we used to say, when you do something wrong, you know, it's like, okay, Prabhu, you got to go in and face the sauce. Is that term still used a little bit, right? You screw up and you go, oh, man, you know. But that discipline, just like in this example today, Advaita Acharya, he went out and taught Mayavadi philosophy. And he knew darn well that Lord Chaitanya was going to have an issue with that. And then if you keep reading, it's either before or after this particular purport, Lord Chaitanya comes in and he just like rips him and he says, what are you doing? And Advaita Acharya is just, he's in ecstasy. He's getting chastised. And yet he's just sitting there going, oh. Because it's on a different plane. It's in a whole different dimension than the one that we're used to. You know, usually when you get chastised, it's, I don't want to hear it, man. You don't understand. But this was very intentional. And it rectified the situation. And from that point forward, to best of my knowledge, that was, then Advaita Acharya said, now I can worship you, my Lord. You are the incarnation of God in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Now the relationship has been set straight. And we don't have to go through this etiquette stuff. You know, let's just push that out the door. And he did. And it succeeded. So I was told I could speak till 8:45. And we're coming up on 8:45. Oh, 10 to 9. Well, somebody else told me 8:45. Tomorrow we're going to need a little more time. So if we have some more time tomorrow. But anyhow, does anybody have any, would like to ask any questions or